Are we recording these? I'll do some more copies. I don't need to. Well, to recap, what we've done, this text of Patia Bignya Hridaya is a text from the Kashmiri Shaiva tradition, and it's a summary by Kshema Raja, who dies about 1050, of the basic philosophy of the Patia Bignya. Patia Bignya means recognition. And so last week we were just been reading it through, really, in Jaidev Singh's translation. 56. It goes up to...
No, I'm confused now.
What
did they give
you,
51 to 59? Oh, it's on the
back. Yeah,
sorry, double sided. Yeah, that's right. Okay, this is single. We probably photocopied more than we can actually get through, but...
This is also double sided.
So, it's a text of it of 18 verses, and I've given you the verses separately if anyone's interested.
Yeah, I'm just working there.
And
then you got to 54.
Sorry. This is 57 to 63. 63. This is just one page we copied. Okay, so there's 63 for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks for it.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got the rest.
Okay. Yeah, well done. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, we looked at verse 1, actually. That's all we looked at last week, verse 1. And that begins with... that this idea that this absolute consciousness from its own free will becomes manifested in particularity in the world, is the cause of the appearance of the universe. And we looked at that word siddhi. And in verse 2 he goes on to elaborate this, and that's by the the Sanskrit verse is svachaya svabhitav vishvam unmilayati. So by the power of her own will, consciousness, which is here's a feminine noun, chitti, means the shakti, or the dynamic aspect of consciousness, unfolds the universe on her own screen. So svabhitav, locative on her own screen or wall or something. So it's like she projects the universe on to her own, on herself. It's not a completely satisfactory image, that.
As there was no screen of television, etc., at the time, what lay behind that metaphor? A fresco on a wall?
Yeah, fresco on a wall, that's right. Yeah, I've been having a couple of talks about frescoes, paintings on walls, as they appear to have depth, oh, that's actually just one surface. So the world is like that.
Which page are we?
Oh, sorry, page 51.
51. I don't know. Sorry,
sutra 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're double-sided, these things, so...
Yeah.
In the actual verse, the svachaya, by her own will. Svaicha. Icha is will, or intention, or desire, even desire. Sva is own, so by her own desire, svachaya. Vishvam is universe. Umilayati, third person singular, she unfolds or makes manifest on her own screen. And then he goes on to give a commentary. This is his own commentary on his own text. And by Svechaya, he makes a point, by the power of herself, not by the power of another, as is maintained by the... I'm not quite sure what he's referring to. That's maintained by the Brahman doctrine and similar systems. I suppose he means a theistic theistic doctrine. So there's no other, there's no there's no theos outside of the self, as it were. So na anyechaya, not by the power of another. Moreover, the power, the phrase by the power of her own will, svachaya, implies that she brings about the universe by her power alone, not by means of any extraneous material cause. In this way, if the aforesaid absolute free will is denied, in this way, i.e. on the presupposition of material cause, etc., if the aforesaid absolute free will is denied to her, her consciousness itself would not be possible. Oh, so he's saying there that, he's actually not arguing for it, but he's just making this claim that that consciousness entails freedom, that free will is entailed by consciousness. And if the universe is caused by something else, then it takes away the freedom of consciousness. It's not a particularly strong argument, that, is it? Is it? I mean, he's assuming his conclusion. But this is a fundamental tenet of the system, that consciousness manifests itself because of its own spontaneous freedom. Svatantra. Svechaya, svecha, or svachanda. And then he develops svabital. Svabital means on her own screen, i.e. in herself as the basis and not anywhere else. She unfolds the previously defined universe from Sadashivada to Earth like a city reflected in a mirror, which, though non-different from its appearance, though different from it, appears as different. So that you've got, a couple of weeks ago we looked at the tattvas, the hierarchy of appearances of consciousness from the Sadashiva right down to the earth tattva, the Bhumi tattva, 36 tattvas from Shiva, actually from Shiva onwards. But Sadashiva is the first, is the form of Shiva that is worshipped by the Shaiva Siddhantas, who manifest the lower universe like a city reflected in a mirror. It's another common image. And ummilana means only making explicit what is already implicit within consciousness. And by this is meant that the existence of the universe is identical with the light of consciousness.
I can't quite remember, but isn't Bhumilayati also the verb that's used for flowers opening?
Yes, it is. Blossoming. Yeah, blossoming. Mm. Yeah, opening out. Yeah, opens out is a good rendering, I think, of this. So as a flower opens out, so the universe blossoms. It's quite a nice imagery. And that blossoming is identical with prakasha. Prakasha is the light of consciousness. So in this system, there's a number of words that are linked up together. So chit, chitti, chaitanya, may all refer to consciousness. And then prakasha means light. And it's, there are two aspects of consciousness. There's prakasha and what's called vimalsha. And they're both intended to exemplify this dynamic aspect of, so prakasha means light and vimarsha. This translated as awareness, but it comes from a root mrish, to touch something. So it's kind of reflexive awareness, reflexive awareness, self-conscious awareness. And these are two aspects of consciousness, or chit, or chaitanya. So these are the two aspects of the absolute. And this is identified with Shiva, the god Shiva, and this is identified with the goddess Shakti. So here it's talking about another word for this vimarsha would be chitti, which is the female form of chit, feminine. So awareness, it's the chitti, shakti, that unfolds the universe on her own screen. And prakasha is the kind of passive dimension, and vimarsha is active. It's only a way of speaking to talk about them as two separate things. But they're intertwined with each other. And there's an image on the side of Hindu temples, in Shaiva temples, with you can look at it either as an elephant or an ox. I don't know if you've seen those. I can't really draw it, I'm afraid.
Three dimensions.
It's, you know, the figures that like the two pots. You see it as two faces or a pot. It's the same thing. I mean, they've got two bodies here. I just can't draw it. But their faces merge together. So you've got the horn of the horn of the ox looks like the trunk of the elephant. Something like that. You get that as quite a common motif. But that's an illustration of the interpenetration of Prakasha and Vimasha, Shiva and Shakti.
Which would be which?
I don't know. Yeah. I think actually it's probably... I think on the temple sides it's probably just... a figurative motif, just a clever thing, but these people take it as a symbol of that union of Shiva and Shakti. So then he goes on to his next sutra. So that, i.e. the universe, is manifold because of the differentiation of reciprocally adapted objects and subjects. You've got a mistake in the transliterated version. There's two N's in the first thing, tanana, and also there's no... You've got a V in Vedart. So it's tan, one word, next word... Nana. Next word, anurupa, grahya, grahaka, and then that V is not there. Vedart. So from or due to Vedart, the differentiation. So because of the differentiation of objects, grahaka and grahya and subjects, grahaka. The grahaka means a grasper, and a grahaya is the object to be grasped. So because of that distinction, which is anurupa, which is correspondent. Because of the distinction of the grasper and the grasped, and he translates anurupa as reciprocally adapted, which is corresponding, connected together. There is nana. There is a manifest. There is manifoldness of that tat of that universe. So that manifoldness is due to the differentiation between subjects and objects, which correspond to each other. Now that it's quite an interesting verse, because in the sense that the subject, the grahaka, and the object, there's a correspondence between limited consciousness and the world and the objects of consciousness. So the world, the consciousness takes on the forms of its objects in this system, a bit like Aristotle, really. So there's an anurupa, a correspondence, or reciprocal relationship between the two. So the form of individual consciousness is partly determined by the objects it contemplates. So if consciousness is focused on pure objects like a god or something or a mantra, then it's transformed to the level of that object. So consciousness takes on the qualities of its objects. So this is anurupa, this correspondence between them. But manifestation, the universe appears to be manifold because of this distinction, because of this differentiation that consciousness, limited consciousness, makes between subjects and objects. And immediately we're in with a problem here. How, if there's only one reality in the universe, which is consciousness, where does differentiation come from? And the Advaita Vedantins don't have a good response to that. But these people say it's due to the contraction of consciousness because of its own will. Now, why does it do that? Yeah. And an earlier text, the Shiva Drishti, says it's because Shiva wants to, because of his krida, his play or his sport, and he hides himself from himself, as a king dresses up as a foot soldier and walks amongst the troops. So Shiva conceals his true nature from himself.
Just put for the Advaita view, you know, the Ajata view, which is that it just isn't born, you know, the universe isn't, you know, there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way that it can be expressed in concepts.
Yeah, yeah. That's why they don't agree with the Advaitins, because they don't deny the reality of the world, but they say the reality of the world is consciousness. So it's different. It's not illusion. It's consciousness. So I think there is some, they do talk about Maya as illusion slightly, but it's what's illusory is not the universe, but the our cognition of it. It's limited cognition is illusory. Just thinking that you're separate from the universe, that's illusory. Mm. But the universe itself is real for them. So they're not Mayavadins in that sense. And they also don't like the Advaitins because they think they have a passive view of consciousness, that for them consciousness is a eunuch, is krida, whereas they have this dynamic view of consciousness, this active dynamic shakti, spanda, vibration. The other word they use is spanda. So as spanda is the vibration of the universe, which is every moment of consciousness as well. It's not just the way the universe unfolds and contracts back into itself, unmilayati. It's this occurs at every moment of awareness. Could we be awake to it, kind of thing? So he explains these words. Tat means the universe. Nana means manifold. Aneka prakaram. Manifold. Why? Because of the differentiation, the Veda, between objects and subjects, which are anurupa, which are in a state of reciprocal adaption. So it's fairly clear, I think. The correspondence of reciprocal adaption or object to subject now follows. Okay. Just as the Sadashiva principle, the Sadashiva tattva, which is the highest, not the very highest tattva, but the fifth tattva, who creates the lower universe. There is the experience of the total universe as an object of the nature of para-para, both identical and different. This is where it gets terribly complicated. A stage in which the experience is of the form I am this, in which the experience is dominated by the consciousness of I, and in which the experience of thisness is yet incipient. Even so, there is a group of experience called the Mantra Maheshwaras, who are governed by the Blessed Lord Sadashiva, and whose existence in that state is brought about by the will of the highest lord. Now, that's terribly complicated, but in these higher tattvas, so these various manifestations of the universe, the Shiva tattva, the Shakti tattva, should have been, sorry, the Ishvara between those, and Sadashiva. These are levels of the pure universe, called the Shuddha Sarga, the pure creation. And this is the impure creation is below, so, and that's where you get Maya. I gave you that at the list of the tattvas. In these higher realms, you've got Shiva is pure I, and then as you go down, you have a differentiation, an emphasis on the I, this relationship, aham idam, changes. And so when the universe is completely manifested, there's a complete emphasis on the this, whereas in the higher levels, there's a complete emphasis, there's only the I, the aham. But as the universe manifests in lower levels, there's a focus on the this. So he says here, the Sadashiva Tattva, just as in the Sadashiva Tattva, there is the experience of the total universe as an object of the nature of Parapara. Here, at this level, the universe is both identical and different from the I, a stage in which the experience is of the form I am this, aham idam, in which the experience is dominated by the consciousness of I, and in which the experience of thisness is yet incipient. Even so, there is a group of experience called the Mantra Maheshvaras. So the I, this, the this, is still subordinated to the I at this stage, but it's only in the impure universe where the this predominates.
Can I just check this handout which you gave us at previously has a slightly different order.
Oh dear, sorry, if that's correct.
Sure
that's
this is form of it.
This is, sorry, yes, you're right, this is correct. I've got Sadashiva in the wrong place. Sadashiva is there.
That's the third one.
Yes, he's the third one, sorry. So he's the highest, sorry, that's a big mistake about. He's the highest he's the main deity of the Shaiva Siddhanta, who's regarded by the Kashmiri Shaivas as the first emanation from Shiva Shakti. And it's from him that he emanates these lower forms, Ishvara and Shuddhavidya. And it's at the level of Sadashiva that you get these eight beings called the Vidyeshvaras that he emanates, really. The Mantra Maheshvaras, who are governed by Sadashiva.
So they're living at the level of
In the pure course, that's right, Sadashiva. Yeah. So the Vidyeshvaras, then below them you get the Mantreshvaras and the mantras below them. Mm. They're all in the pure realm of the universe. And it's not even Sadashiva gets his hands dirty creating the universe, it's Ananta, who's the first of the Vidyeshvaras, or the Mantreshvaras. Sadashiva has an iconography. He's got five faces, and he's the object of worship in the Shaiva Siddhanta tradition. So you've got here, he's going through these tattvas here, you see. So you've got Sadashiva here, and the next level down, where you've got so Sadashiva level, you've got I this, where the this is still incorporated within to the I, is still sort of incipient within it. And the next level down, the Ishvara Tattva, the entire universe is apprehended in the form of I am this, where both consciousness of I and that of this are simultaneously distinct or manifested, sputta.
So this is where duality is coming in.
Yes, that's right.
At this level, as the purity is
being compromised.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. The duality is coming in here. and this, where both the consciousness of I and that of this are simultaneously distinct. But even so, he says, there's a group of individual experience known as Manchreshvaras, governed by the Venerable Ishvara. And then the next stage down, to complete the process, you've got in the stage of Vidya, or Shuddhavidya, just as there are experiences called mantras of different states together with many secondary distinctions governed by Ananta Patarika, even so there is an object of knowledge. As an object of knowledge, one universe whose sole essence consists of differentiations. So, as you go down, you've got more and more differentiation. Yeah, so you've got Shiva, Shakti, who are clearly inseparable, and this corresponds to Prakasha and Prakasha. And then you get the first beginnings of manifestation, Sadashiva, which is characterised by I this, where there's an emphasis on the I, and that this is still incipient within it. And then the next level down, Ishvara, you get the I and the this becomes more separated out, if you like. And then Shuddhavidya, I keep wanting to put Sadashiva there. Shuddhavidya, you've got an emphasis, the I this is still there, but the emphasis on the this, there's more gap between them. So this becomes more and more differentiated out as you go down. And at each of these levels, you've got corresponding classes of beings, so you've got the mantras there. And then you've got the mantra maheshvaras and the vidyeshvaras, or mantra, maha mantra maheshvaras, or whatever the term they use. Vidyeshvaras is a common word. And these are sort of like angelic kind of beings. They're gods, really. And the chief of those gods is called Ananta. So it's a terribly complicated system, and I think it's because it's an attempt to incorporate all these different systems into a single coherent thing. So there's an object of knowledge, a pramaya, which is the universe, whose essence consists of differentiations. Whose essence, Bedaka Sara, whose Sara, the essence, the sap, consists of Bedas, of difference. And then it's got these other classes of beings. It goes on to talk about the universe in terms of the different categories of beings that live in it. So above Maya, that's the tattva, first tattva below Shuddhavidya, the sixth tattva, if you're looking at it from the top down, are experienced called Vijnana Kalas, who are devoid of the sense of agency and who are of the nature of pure awareness. Corresponding to them is their object of knowledge or field of experience, which is identical with them. So here you've got these beings called Vijnana. Vijnana is consciousness. Vijnana Kala, those whose power is consciousness. Or they're also called Vijnana Kevalas, who are consciousness only, beings of consciousness only. But they're devoid of a sense of agency, but they have a nature of pure awareness. So they're non-differentiated, if you like, from their world of experience. So the lower down you go, there's a relationship between consciousness, citta, and loka, or the world, or bhuvana. And the further down you go in this universe, the more differentiated these two become. And the higher up you go, the more they merge together. So at this level, citta and loka are non-differentiated, or hardly any differentiation. So if you like, each level has as its object the lower universe, is the object of consciousness, if you like, of the higher levels. That's another way of looking at it, I think. So here we've got corresponding to them is their object of knowledge or field of experience, which is identical with them. And their object is the lower beings called Sakalas and Pralayakalas. So at the stage of Maya, you've got these, above the stage of Maya, they're kind of but below the mantras, below Shuddha Vidya, are these Vijnana Kevalas. And then at the level of Maya, you get these other beings called the Shunya Kevalas or Pralaya Kevalas, those who experience, those who are comprising only emptiness. To make more sense of this, you've got three at these higher levels there's something called mala. Mala means impurity, and there are three impurities of individuality which taint pure consciousness: illusion, maya, and
karma.
Yeah. So these higher beings, the Vijnana Kalas, only possess a sense of, some sense of individuality. However, they don't have illusion and they don't have karma. The Pralaya Kevalins have a sense of individuality and a sense of karma. They possess that because they'll be reborn out of that state at some point. But the lower beings, like us, we're called Sakalas. They possess all three. We've got individuality, we're deluded, and we have action. And these action traces in us which keep us being reincarnated over and over again. And the Sakalas are from Maya right the way down to the level of the earth, who are different from everything and limited, and whose field of experience is as limited and different as themselves. So you've got these different categories of beings which the universe manifests. And these are all limitations of consciousness. And the limitation of consciousness is another way of saying the greater differentiation between subject and object. So as the universe closes, as consciousness closes in to its pure unified identity, it opens out unmilayati to differentiation between subjects and objects. And conversely, as that differentiation closes in, and so the universe opens out to its true nature. So you've got this twofold process.
It's interesting that they seem in the description to come from the top down, starting with Shiva and then seeing how it unfolds.
Mm.
Whereas in the Buddhist cosmology, whatever it is, you're starting with your lower forms of meditative experience and then you're gradually sort of moving up until you're inhabiting the sort of divine realms, and they're coming at it from you.
That's right, they do, don't they? Yes.
Yeah.
So the jhanas or the dhyanas, you go up, you start with this level, and you go up in their system of description. Yeah, that's right. But here he's starting from the top down. Mm. Yeah.
Because there isn't a very clear cosmology in Buddhism, is there, in many ways?
There is quite a clear. Well, there's different ones for different schools, but again, you have these many layers, and again, you have there are divine beings who inhabit different levels and who are characterized by different things.
But as to sort of identity, it's kind of rather left open in the Pali Suttas. You know, it's not the self isn't this and it isn't this and it isn't this, but what is it? Is that it actually is left?
No, yes, I mean it's just a way of trying to describe a meditative experience that that you're actually dwelling at these realms.
It's a very interesting because they do correspond. It's interesting that the Indians would call it these hierarchical cosmologies, and the Buddhists do and the Hindus do here.
It's just a way of trying to get your mind round it, I think.
Yeah.
so difficult to.
And they are linked with meditation. So the idea that the inwardness is also the journey within is a journey through the cosmos as well. There's a journey up. So you get that idea. Ascent.
The world is always a descent from purity to material.
That's right. Yeah. So this is a descent from purity. That's right. And meditation is a reverse process.
You're going back to your original.
Yeah. It's exactly the same. It seems to me that that basic structure is fundamental and almost common in Indian traditions. But the details vary.
Yes.
And like here, and it gets terribly complicated. And then you've got Shiva Pratarika, however, who transcends all these, who is constituted of Prakasha, has states or modes which are only of the form of Prakasha. Shiva Pratarika, that's a name for Shiva.
What is Pratarika?
Bhatta is reverend or holy or something. So the good doctors of the Shaiva Siddhanta are all called Bhatta. Bhatta Ramakanta. It's honorific. So Shiva Tattva transcends all of those, and he's constituted of Prakasha. And in blissful Parama Shiva, the highest Shiva, who both transcends the universe and is the universe, Vishvatirana and Vishwamaya, who comprises the universe and transcends it, and who is the highest bliss and consists of a mass of light, a density, a gana, flashes the entire universe from Shiva down to earth in identity. Spurati, he flashes forth, Spurati manifests the universe, which is Abhedana, which is non-different from himself. So Shiva, the top tattva, is pure consciousness, is pure light, Prakasha, and is beyond all of that. And then Parama Shiva, who is sometimes said to be the 37th tattva, who is a level that isn't a level, if you like, is the Parama Shiva, the very, very top, if you like, there isn't a top, it's just a way of speaking about this absolute, who is transcends the universe but also comprises the universe at the same time. So he's transcendent and immanent, Vishvatirana and Vishvamaya. And in that state, that higher state, there is neither subject, grahaka, nor object, grahya. Rather, what is practically meant to be stated is that in actuality, the highest blissful Shiva alone manifests himself in this way, in numerous forms of multiplicity. Which leads into the next sutra, Yata Cha Bhagavan Vishvashirira. As the Lord, the Bhagavan, has the entire universe as his body, Vishvashirira, the body of the universe, has the universe as his body. So, and then it leads into the next sutra, the individual sutra 4. Have you missed anything? What's happened? Have we done two sutras already? We must have done.
Yeah.
So we're going to 4 now. Yeah, the individual experience also, in whom chitti or consciousness is contracted, has the universe as his body in a contracted form. So it's as above, so below. So we reflect the whole universe within us, the whole process. So chitti samkochatma chetanopi samkuchita vishvamaya. So before we move on to that verse, what about that 3? Is everyone happy with that? Yeah. Again, I think it's not a pure, it's very difficult for these people to maintain a pure language of non-duality. They're always talking about, so you've got pure non-dualism doesn't allow a language of emanation or manifestation, spurati and umilayati and all this kind of language, and they oscillate between those two.
It's explained in Buddhism, or some types of Buddhism, it's explained in terms of the two truths. So you say you have the absolute truth and you have the relative truth, and I don't know if that's kind of the same.
I think it's a similar
angle,
thing
really.
The highest truth is that there's no differentiation, but Yeah, even that distinction between relative and absolute truth is merely
a relationship. You can't explain other than saying that's how it is, or it's self evident, or you can't. You're left.
I mean, they say that some passages, not in this text, say the Vijnana Bhairava talks about, is aware of this issue, this problem, as is Arinavagupta. And he talks that actually, in truth, there's no tattva which is impure, because these are called the Ashuddha tattva, the impure tattvas. But in reality, there's no tattva which is impure. They're all pure, if you like. I'll bring along a couple of passages from Arinavagupta who highlights this problem.
In reality, you can't anyway conceptualise it. All you can do is convey it in silence, and which is, you know,
yeah, they weren't very silent, these characters. They talked an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it could be seen as a thorn, to extract a thorn. You know,
that's right. But a thorn to get rid of a thorn. There was silence, more or less. I mean, the tradition did carry on after Kshemaraja, but it gets attenuated. So Abhinavagupta, in his commentary on the Ishvara Pratyabhijna, which we looked at, engages really. I mean, he understands the Buddhist position, and he really engages with it in a very interesting way. But there's no Buddhist response, unfortunately, after him. As if the tradition's going silent. I think it's due to political reasons in the 11th century onwards.
Where it disappears from
it. Disappears, yeah. That's Muslim invasions, I think, really, did it. And the destruction of the Buddhist monasteries. Mm. So it stopped these debates, unfortunately. So then, so it's fourth sutra then. You've got the experience in whom chitti is sankochana, is contracted. So the chaitana, the individual experience, even chetanopi, even the chaitana, even the individual experience, who comprises, whose maya, who's made up of sankuchita vishva, who's made up of contracted consciousness, has as his atma, his essence, contracted chitti, if that makes any sense.
It's very interesting that the consciousness is greater than the body.
It's greater than the body.
Normally.
Yeah.
Have that. And it's very anthropomorphic, isn't it? Because it's associating with humanity as the highest being. Even though it's the consciousness is the highest.
Yeah, this is the highest being.
The universe is in the form of a human form.
That's an ancient idea going back to Vedic.
Right, the body of the universe. Purusha.
It's there all the time.
Yeah.
But the idea that the consciousness itself is greater than that which contains it, the physical containment.
That's a very ancient
mind-expanding.
That's right. It was William Blake, is it? To see heaven in a wildflower.
You know, to see the universe within yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than the individual contained in the universe, it's quite a reversal,
isn't it? It is. It's a very interesting reversal. The universe is in the body. This is what's fundamentally says. In that, if we look at that verse 4 before we sort of wind up, you've got chitti sankochatma in the Sanskrit text. There, you've got the handout of in the transliteration, you've got the chitti sankochatma chetanopi sankuchita vishvamaya. You've got chetana, which even chetana, which is the individual consciousness, it's on the other handout that you've got there. Chetana consciousness. The lower state of consciousness, individualized consciousness. Even individualized consciousness, which and this nominative maya, which is comprised, made of Sankuchita Vishva, which is made of contracted, which comprises contracted, the universe contracted within it, if you like. Even consciousness, which is, which comprises the contracted universe within it, has, as its true nature, if you like, Chitti Sankocha Atma. Atma, his, its essence, is Chitti Sankocha, the contraction of pure consciousness, Chitti. So, as you were saying, the whole body has, the person has the whole thing within it, both the universe and the essence of pure consciousness. Yeah, actually, his commentary is quite long on this, so. I think the essence of the whole system are actually contained in those first four, really. I think we probably have to wind up. I'm sorry I was a bit late, 10 minutes late at the beginning, but it's a good text, this, isn't it? Yeah.
Is there any book that you could point us to?
Yeah, there's a book.
Has anyone written on this?
There's a book by Joukowsky, whose name I can't. Dyke Skalski, I always think, who called the Doctrine of Vibration. But this isn't a very good translation. Well, it's okay, but it's a bit difficult to read. It's not inaccurate, but it's difficult to read.
Andre Padu is quite interesting. Vark.
Oh yeah, Vark.
Marvelous. There's the semantic elements of Lakshmi Chardas, which is actually one of the most interesting areas of it.
Highly recommend that. Andre Padu's Vark. Yeah. He's a good scholar.
The Sunni series is very good. It's got a couple of the Polish names.
Yeah, Joukowsky.
Yeah. How do you spell it?
I can't spell it. Oh, it's a puzzle. D-Y... D-Y-C-Z-K-O-W-S-K-I. Joukowsky.
Is he based in the States?
No, he lives in India, in Varanasi.
Oh, yeah, he's Sanskrit.
Sanskritist, yeah. And I think he's still there. But there's a good book, that Doctrine of Vibration.
Yeah.
And he's also done...
companion volume to it.
There's a... Yeah, he does a translation of the Spanda... Spanda Sutras. Spanda Karikas.
Yeah.
But he hasn't done a translation of this. Somebody did tell me the other day there was another English translation of this. There's one by Leidecker, which isn't very good. But there's another one, a more recent one apparently, but I don't know what that is. But I'd encourage you to read Joukowsky's text, and also Andre Padu's excellent Varch.
It's good from the meditative point of view.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. Yeah. We're doing his French articles into English, in a book called Tantric Mantras, which is coming out at the end of the year. So I'll see him next week, Andre Padu.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it, where are you seeing him?
In Paris.
Oh, yeah.
He's very sprightly. He's 89, you know, he's still wandering around.
Did he
like
to come over here?
I said come over, he doesn't want to. Doesn't want to go anywhere.
What's his English like?
Excellent. Fluent. Incredibly sophisticated character. He was a diplomat for many years, Andre Padu. Then he turned to the study of the traditions quite late in his life, I think, in his 30s or 40s.
Does he sort of practice the tradition?
I don't know. He might do, I don't know. He's certainly full of life.
Cathedral and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just written a book on tantrism. He just published in French. So it's hope for us all, isn't there? Really?
Well, that's when you've got the time, I suppose.
Yeah, when you're retired, that's right. Yeah.
work obligations fall away.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for coming, for supporting this. It's really good. Thank you so much. And I think next term's going to be a bit busy, actually, so I'm thinking of starting this again in October, if you're interested. Yes. I thought we could just read the one book. What do you think about that? You interested in just reading this? We could just recap what we've done and then carry on, read a whole book.
I mean, is there anything on the Svatantra Tantra?
No. There's a big gap. Yeah. It's there's nothing. There's a PhD done in Chicago on it. But there's nothing on the Svachanda. Very little on the Nature Tantra too.
Mm.
But it's not an easy text, the Svachanda.
No, interesting in its implications for meditation.
It's got lots of, I haven't read it, I've read bits of it, but have you got a section you'd like to read then, particularly?
Well, I suppose on the Uchara of, I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly, of the Vayam, this sort of starting off with the R sound and going up through different chakras.
Oh, Padupa writes about that, I think.
He does, that's where I got it from.
I can't remember, I don't know what chapter it is of the text. Well, let's have a look at it. It's going to be easier to do this.
Well, it's up to everybody else, really. I'm quite, interested in the sort of practical elements of spirituality.
There's no translation of that text, so
no.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So I think we better do something with the translation. Otherwise it'll take too long. He talks about practices a bit towards the end of this. Do you know the Vijnana Bhairava? There's a translation by Jayadev Singh of that. That's got practices in it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming.
I feel a little drowsy.
Yes, you're very welcome.
Thank you.